Welcome to The Cooler Ring, a podcast for manufacturing marketers brought to you by Cooler Partners. My name is Jeff White, and joining me today is Carmen Perry. Carmen, how you doing, sir?
Look, I can't complain. I know that this will probably be released on a Tuesday, but we're recording this on a summer Friday. So, I mean, pretty hard to complain about that. And always a pleasure to be recording with you, good sir.
Yeah, likewise. And, you know, wouldn't be Atlantic Canadian if we didn't mention the weather at least once.
But. Yeah, you know, we need to, there's a quota. Yeah.
There is, for sure. Our check is in the mail. I'm looking forward to this conversation because, you know, a lot of the organizations that we work with, a lot of the companies that have been represented on this podcast, you know, these are long-standing, mature companies. And, you know, there's some very unique things that you need to deal with when, in terms of creating strategies for growing those companies.
Yeah, exactly. Mature companies in mature spaces, it begs the question of marketers, like, kind of, what now? It can easily, I think, seem like a lot of the low-hanging fruit has already been plucked, so to speak. Interested to dive into that challenge.
Me as well. So joining us today is Brad Davis. Brad is the Director of Sales and Marketing at Charter Wire. Welcome to the Cooler Ring, Brad.
Hey, thanks, guys. Happy to be here, and thanks for everything you do. We need to keep manufacturing strong in North America, so appreciate what you do.
I appreciate that, Brad. Thank you so much, and it's wonderful to have you on the show.
Summer's coming in Milwaukee. We're not there yet, so. July 23rd is when it is. So,
if my memory serves of Milwaukee in that part of the world, that when it does arrive, it's a full bore.
Yeah, it comes. We go from not so great to a nice day here and there pretty quickly.
There's a place up here in Nova Scotia, Cape Breton, which is kind of famous for having some challenging weather by time. So the old joke is, what did you do last summer? And it's like, we played baseball that day.
Yeah. Exactly.
Good, sir. Good to be chatting. And I want to kind of let our listeners know a little bit more about you and Charter Wire. So tell us more about the company and how you ended up there.
Well, the company, it's unique. We're a manufacturer of steel profiles that's sold to OEMs so they can use them in their process. We also make cold finished steel bars that are sold through steel distribution centers. We use a unique process called cold rolling. It's very much a niche. We're a mature business. We've been here for about 90 years, privately owned, and steel has been in a bit of a decline, steady decline over a few decades as parts get moved overseas. And that's why we're getting some protection from tariffs right now to kind of help boost our industry. As far as me and how I got here, I'm from Milwaukee, started in sales in 1991, basically because I didn't want to go to law school and be a lawyer. And there weren't a lot of options back then like there are now. We didn't have all the technology companies. So found myself in the sales and unconventional path here. I got leadership roles in finance and supply chain. So I've had a lot of different roles. And I think that gives me a different perspective as far as being in sales and marketing now. Spent most of my career in Houston. So happy to be back here in Milwaukee where I grew up and with a great company, with a great culture and growing. So
that's awesome. And thank you for that background. You don't paint an exciting picture when you talk about a 90-year-old company, decades of decline in the sector more broadly. This can seem a bit daunting. How do you even begin to think about turning to a mindset of growth in that kind of environment, Brad?
Yeah, I don't mind being in a declining market. Steel is still a large market, and we're a niche. We have a great service model. So to me, I looked at it as an opportunity. I started here in 2018, so I'm in 7 years. And when we started, we were kind of looking to grow. We hadn't grown in a long time, so kind of had a blank slate to create some growth opportunities, which has been super fun. And a lot of the businesses that I go to, a lot of the plants that I've walked through over the years are, I see a lot in the same boat where companies have become very efficient at what they do over decades. And it really puts them in a position because they become so efficient to where, I mean, they become hard to compete against, but on the other hand, it's hard to grow because you've concentrated on doing what you're doing for so long. So to me, I see it as a good opportunity to create growth because you've created a good situation for yourself and your customers.
That, you know, you talk about those efficiencies and kind of, you know, you're almost at the most mature, best version of yourself when you're talking about the organization that way. How do you then look at that and look at what one assumes are mature competitors as well, who are also kind of striving towards those levels of efficiency in production? How do you differentiate yourself against those other organizations and stand out and compete?
Yeah, I think, the way we did it is when you start, you look at the three things, you know, you look at your sales team, your sales process, and your sales strategy, and you want to be great at all three of those to create the growth. We focused first on sales strategy here, and one of our first moves was hiring a strategic marketing manager who just focuses on upstream marketing. So what that role does is they build a deep understanding of your business differentiators, and they connect those to positive customer outcomes, and that's the first step. Basically what the person does full time. And I think if you're not doing that, or you haven't done that for a while in your company, that's where businesses get stuck. When they start, you know, what a typical business would do is create a pipeline. I'm just going to create a big pipeline of sales opportunities. It's like 10x what our targeted growth rate is, and approach it that way. And then just, you know, look at sales to go bring in purchase orders. And we did actually the opposite. We had a pipeline like that, very large, much larger than our target growth. And we actually cut it back to less than 2x, from 10, more than 10x to less than 2x, only focusing on what's actually in our sweet spot and something that's a very high probability of success. And what that does is it relieves the business from chasing, and you're working on things that you're more efficient at than your competitors. And if you build a big pipeline, it makes no sense because you're wasting your time and resources. Another company can do it more efficiently than you can. It doesn't make sense for you to go after that opportunity and be in that chase mode.
This is a really interesting hint for me because I part of me was thinking that the drive towards efficiency and the, you know, efficiency ruling all would be a tough environment to eke out additional marketing spend. But then you just kind of answered the question before I asked it because you're like, no, we actually drove to make the pipeline more efficient too.
Yeah, but we wanted to grow. So we focused on that value proposition. And you know, we knew our customers were very happy. I think a lot of these companies are in the same boat that they have these long-standing customers for decades. Probably a great service model to where things run very smoothly. And so we just wanted to expand our niche, focus on our current products, our current customers, what's working, and innovate around that to create different growth opportunities or growth ideas. You know, I think, you know, in the strategy work, it's the same sort of chasing concept where I think companies get into this where they're putting all sorts of ideas out there and kind of chasing new growth ideas, to where we took another different approach where we're narrowing the ideas, actually taking... We took a couple of years before we really honed in our strategy. Looking at the outside market, and like you were talking about before, what are the competitors really good at? What's happening in the marketplace before we really made those decisions? And then what we did is we layered, we use a concept called Horizon Growth Opportunities or Horizon Strategies. We look at things that we can do right now with our current capabilities in our first horizon, then a second horizon where we might have to add a piece of equipment, do something different, use capital to grow. And then the third horizon would be something new that you're doing or creating something new. So that's how we layered out our growth strategy.
If I could speak that back to you a bit, is it kind of telling us that kind of step one is to trim the pipeline, kind of get rid of the vanity metrics and stop chasing marginal fit opportunities, focus on the core, and then as you begin to solidify that foundation, and you start thinking about that horizon strategy model that you just mentioned, it's fair to say then that what you find on the horizon is more tightly aligned to your core capabilities. So it makes it so it's a more reliable bet.
Exactly. And there's usually a few different options, in your horizon model. Hopefully there's a few different options, but you explained it perfectly. A suggestion I would have as far as, when you move into an execution stage of a Horizon 2 idea is to pick the one thing and focus on it. We've talked about chasing a little bit, but typically, in my experience, there's really one thing that, the team comes up with that say, okay, this is the one thing that we know can reliably produce the growth. And if you can get it to the one or maybe the two things, put your time and energy in that. If you're doing, okay, here's 10 our growth initiatives we're going to do this year, that's where you're going to fall flat. If you just do the one and focus on that, typically you're going to know which it is. Get that, get the execution on that item and get the growth.
I love the focus. I really applaud that. That's it's smart and it feels like, the right strategy to approach that in that way. Are you primarily doing this with existing accounts, or how much of this is actually focusing on winning net new business with the core processes that you do well?
Yeah, exactly. I think we focused on innovating what we're doing with our current products and current customers. So what we did is the customers are really like us. We're adding items that they already purchased that we could provide that helps them either with velocity, makes it easier for them to optimize by buying more from us. And if they're telling us they want us to buy more from us, but also through our strategic work, we'll identify a market with that approach that we could get that we hadn't had before. So it's serving your customers, innovating around your products, but also gives you entry into a new market. So again, took some time to recognize this, but that's how we decided to move forward with the way we do it.
I would have to imagine mature manufacturers fall victim to this a little bit more. This idea, that it's easy for them to understand and see all of the complexity in an industry, and they've been at it for so long, they could, I think, probably quite easily find themselves serving markets or conducting activities that aren't particularly profitable, and they probably really need to, this requirement for focus is probably even more acute for them.
Yeah, I think one other trap is, an executive might be looking for quick results. What's the big opportunity? How quickly can we get purchase orders without looking at or having a good understanding of the strategic fit and the differentiators? And I think, that pressure, that tendency to go for quick growth is really hurtful, because, if you're trying to grow too fast or do too many things, is the trap for a mature company, I think. Another tendency I've seen is for us, we don't just look at growth, we look at sustainable profitability. And for this, we like to to leverage fixed costs as much as possible and avoid that tendency of, you know, oh, we're going to create growth. We're going to build a new department that is innovative or create an innovation center. You're actually doing harm because you're adding costs, which is harder to leverage to create the profitability. And you're also losing the ties within the business. You should be working in the business to create strategy rather than outside the business to create the strategy. So that's another tendency to avoid.
Yeah, I have often wondered about that innovation department model. The rest of the company, you can count on us to be boring and not moving forward at all. That's the innovation people do the innovation.
Yeah, exactly. That doesn't work. And it's, but, you know, I think that's the, you know, the larger corporations seem to do that more often.
Yeah, I mean, I do think that sometimes the incubator model, you know, I could make an argument for it in certain corporate environments, but I also tend to have a similar inclination to you towards as I think about it. I wonder, you know, Brad, have you faced any pushback on this approach? Because I think, you know, sometimes marketers get by selling, hope and opportunity and visions of what could be that maybe never come true. But, man, you're like taking a very super practical approach here. How have you found that approach has landed with the ownership and powers that be?
Well, we're lucky here. I mean, that's a great question because it's not always popular to go slowly and be that focused and narrow. But our ownership's really, really on board and very supportive of the approach, being methodical. And I think overall as a company, that fits really well with a long-term approach, a fourth-generation company who wants to look at the long-term. That's always how the company's been. So we're really lucky, and I would, you know, I'm really thankful that we take that approach and not, because I've been in the other position. It's not easy if you're with somebody who's looking for what you would describe as quick growth. What's the next opportunity fast, and what wants to do things that puts a lot of pressure on quick activity.
Yeah, and forces marketers to suggest that things are more certain than they are.
Yeah, we're optimistic about things, but we also are pretty analytical, test things before we do it, take our time, ask a lot of questions, and really pressure test our ideas before making a decision. So,
how are you tracking this? Are you managing this within any form of CRM and technology that's kind of showing that the strategy is working?
Yeah, well, a good question. We do have the CRM, and we do have our metrics, but we do it a little bit differently. Filling a CRM is fine, but I think it creates frustration in a business because, you know, you'll gravitate toward, okay, we have a lot of things in front of us we could get right now. How soon can we do it? But it also creates an environment where the people who are responsible for executing go into survival mode, and they're just going to put in a big opportunities, and we're going to do these at a very later date, so they don't, you know, they don't have the accountability to drive it home. And then the managers are, I think there creates frustration because they want to see accuracy in the CRM, and they'll get to these meetings and they're just questioning how things are moving and why things aren't updated correctly. So I think, you know, 98% of the people who have these sort of discussions are probably not happy with the way these meetings go. So the way we look at it is more efficiency as far as moving these projects forward. Like the discussions, like how our strategy discussions, our pipeline movements, we're like tracking, are we, are these working or not? Are we working on too much, not enough? What's moving through? What's not moving through? So we're looking at the efficiency of the process rather than just updates.
I'm curious if you would suggest that if you found any drawbacks to the approach. And don't get me wrong, I think it feels like the approach is a great, it seems like it's the right approach and right strategy for the right type of business. But I'm just, is there any kind of shadow side to it that you've seen? Do you sometimes, feel like you move too slow because of being this methodical, as an example?
Yeah, that would be, I think, a drawback is you might miss an opportunity. There's a lot of, there's opportunities that come up in the market because, the pandemic was a good example of things really roaring back. So you wish you had certain capabilities to take advantage of that. And now the tariff situation obviously changes a lot. So you want to be prepared to, catch anything that comes your way. So the methodical approach, I think that is our, some things we wish we did differently is make decisions a little more quickly. But then again, we're in it for the long term, whether there's supply chain shocks or tariffs or this or that, it's not going to affect what we're doing 10 or 20 years from now. So that's what we try to keep in mind.
Yeah, it's hard to have your cake and eat it too in that regard. You can't say the whole benefit is being methodical and slow and focused and then say, now we're going
to be able to turn on a dime.
Right.
Yeah. Although I will say if you're, interfacing with operations a lot, we're a little bit smaller, so, we're well connected to operations. It's, not chasing and not wasting operations time on going after projects that don't fit, I think, is appreciated.
Yeah, that probably keeps people a hell of a lot happier, I would
think. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah. Oh, we actually know how to do this.
Yeah.
You've touched on it a couple of times, and I'm really interested to know, how have you found, since tariffs have been implemented and those discussions have started, has it actually had a positive impact on the business?
It's been neutral for us. We do have a steel mill with Charger, and they're having a positive impact. I think the tariffs are more protective of the steel mills. And I think the tariffs here, they include downstream products more aggressively than they have in the past with fewer exclusions. So we think it's going to have a positive impact, but you need a strong end market as well. But whether all parts are manufactured in China and now they're manufactured in the United States, that's going to take a while to see if that has an effect, positive effect. But it's only going to be more positive than negative for us.
I appreciate that response. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. Of all of the sectors where you've seen tariffs applied, it's the one where you can see for the incumbents within the U.S. where that would be of some help. Mm-hmm. I think the long-term bet remains to be seen, as Brad mentioned. We actually see repatriation of manufacturing capability in a bigger way. I think we can, everybody was probably do well to be a bit skeptical of that, but we'll see.
Yeah.
Brad, I'm curious, when you taking this approach, how do you feel it connects with the modern world of marketing? In some ways, so much of what we see in marketing these days, I have to beat up on SaaS people, but it's about fast moving things. What's happening right now? What's generating results this month? It feels like this is just a completely different world in terms of how you're thinking about it.
Yeah, I think it is. I think marketing is actually involved as a profession more positively than the sales has evolved. I think the sales profession in general is not in a good place. The marketing seems to be more analytical, or evolving with the times better, looking at using analytics. And that's how we use marketing, where the downstream marketing doesn't really do much for us with, you know, a niche mature business. But upstream marketing and being strategic and analytical, I think, is evolving really nicely.
That's a fair point. That it would that would, I could see where a mature industries where the more kind of analytical nature of today's marketing would align with that.
Yeah,
that makes sense to me. I mean, I'm curious about that comment about sales, though. What do you think? What do you think they're getting wrong? Having spent more of your career, I think, on the sales side than marketing side.
Yeah, it's, you know, sales team. Having a great sales team is really important. It's your contact point to customers. I just think the profession over many decades, as far as hiring and training techniques, has been not good. I think, you know, overall in manufacturing, the data would say that CEOs and presidents aren't happy with sales leadership in general, and there's a lot of turnover, and that's just the data. But if you say somebody is, hey, I know a guy, he's super salesy, that's not a positive, you know, description of somebody. And talking to somebody who's going to talk a lot and not take no for an answer, you know, I don't want to put someone like that in front of the customer. So I want somebody who's going to listen, who's very curious, who's strategic. And we like to have a rule where, you know, the customer is talking over 70% of the time. And, you know, when I see salespeople, when I've traveled with salespeople throughout my career, it's more, you know, talking about themselves and talking about their presentation without asking a lot of questions. It just doesn't do any good for the company. But that's what manufacturers have hired for and trained for over a very long time. So,
but man, like hiring within manufacturing is hard enough. Hiring an empathetic salesperson within manufacturing must take it to another level.
Yeah. And that's where I think companies need to take that seriously. You know, use outside professionals. You know, I don't have the time to train with salespeople all the time, but you look at how important it is, you know, and how coaching is used in other professions. We use it here where we use sales coaching, external sales coaching to help us and do more, gets deeply involved in people's personalities and how they react to customers and, help them improve. And I probably not use very often in mature manufacturers, but, it's important enough to, I think we need to do a lot of that as far as an industry. It made the customers overall happier and improve the reputation of our profession.
Brad, this has been a fascinating conversation. I think the listeners will have gotten a lot of kind of just an interesting way of kind of a lens through which to look at their work, especially so many people find themselves in manufacturing organizations that are, like I say, 90, 100. I think we had one on the show here recently, over 200 years old. You know, this is an important topic, and I thank you for bringing your expertise to the show.
Yeah, hopefully it was helpful, and I had a lot of fun doing the podcast, so thank you.
Yeah, I did as well. Thanks a lot, Brett.